This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Deborah Becker, in for Meghna Chakrabarty.
Nice try, freshman. Tell you what, for being such brave little kids, I'm only going to give each of you 5 licks, okay?
That's Ben Affleck in the 1993 film Dazed and Confused. In that scene, he and other seniors use a paddle on a freshman as part of a hazing ritual.
Hazing is nothing new, but 2 recent local hazing incidents raise some interesting questions. In one incident, 3 Somerville High School students are charged in the brutal sexual assault of a high school freshman during a summer camp for the junior varsity soccer team.
In the other incident, police are investigating a hazing incident in Chelmsford involving the high school football team during a summer camp in New Hampshire. Well, we'd like to hear from you. Have you been the victim of hazing? And what do you think leads to hazing among sports teams? Has it become more violent or more sexualized? And what do you think can be done to stop it? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. With us in the studio to talk about this is Dan Lebowitz. He's the executive director of Northeastern University's Center for Sport and Society. He also coaches youth basketball. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, these horrific hazing incidents that we've read about recently in Somerville and Chelmsford, why do you think that these types of things happen on sports teams?
I think that, I hate to limit it to the scope of sport. I think that, if we look at the sort of larger aspects of our cultural society and the social fabric of our society, the power dynamic of, in many respects, a rape culture that dominates much of the culture and is something that has a trickle-down or emanates throughout a lot of different venues, and sport would be one of them. I think in many respects, this is a dynamic of an outgrowth of that power dynamic and the way in which we acculturate young boys in our country. And I think that, we need to take a real hard look at the way we acculturate young boys, the way in which we teach them about kindness and compassion and create a construct of manhood that the present construct of manhood is, can I dominate you? And if I dominate you, then that's the best outgrowth of competition.
And that's what you mean by rape culture.
Yeah, I would say that, that it plays itself out in the number of sexual assaults that we see on women. And I think that in almost every aspect of our society, there's a power dynamic in which we teach that the utmost pinnacle of competition is domination.
Hmm. So I'm wondering, there have been studies done about how often this happens, and I believe one of them that's been frequently cited was from 2000, and it said about half of the high school students who belonged to groups were subjected to some form of hazing. So it was prevalent 13 years ago. We certainly talked about the 1993 film that we used a clip of in the introduction. How prevalent do we know is hazing, and is it getting worse?
I think that, in many respects, the ubiquitous nature of the internet, how fast this world is coming at these kids, social media, the number of things that they're on, and the culture in general in terms of television and media and the like, I think that in many respects, it probably is getting worse because we can't comprehend from at least my generation. We hear a lot of people say, oh, bullying's always been with us or hazing's been with us and I made it through. But they haven't made it through in this type of a genre, in this type of a ongoing, nonstop media cycle, ongoing, nonstop social media interaction. And so, I think both live and in social media, the extent and heightened nature of bullying and of hazing and of sort of this rape culture that I talk about is gotten to a point where we can't look at it. We have to look at it in many respects like we look at something that's like cancer. We think about cancer, we look at it as a scientific problem, and we look for solutions. Well, here's a social science problem, the evolution of hazing, of bullying, of rape culture. And what are we going to do in terms of long-term, sustainable, ongoing, facilitated conversations and education and curriculum that is going to lead kids to the cognitive development where they can stand up and say and become empowered as bystanders to say, this is socially unacceptable, and I'm going to stand up and be proactive about it being socially unacceptable.
You know, from our Facebook page, we have a comment from Herman Miranda, who writes, we can stop hazing by not calling it hazing. Sodomizing someone with a broomstick, which of course is what is alleged to have happened in Somerville, is not hazing. It's a violent sexual crime. I think it's a good point, but I think it was allegedly taking place during some sort of hazing. At least that's what we believe right now. And the question is, you know, does that indicate that there's a trend toward more violence in hazing rituals? I'd also like to go to the phones because a lot of people want to weigh in on this. Catherine is calling from Brighton. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hello. I wanted to chip in because I am the product of a varsity college team that participated in a nonviolent and semi-optional hazing ritual that was, I thought, very valuable to us as athletes and as a team. It brought the team together. It meant that we had a shared experience. And because it was nonviolent and because we allowed freshmen to opt out, it meant that although we had to do it under the table and without the knowledge of our coaches and the administration, it was something that really I treasure the memories of. And while I condemn the current incidents as much as anyone else does, I wanted to add to the conversation that for some people and for some teams, the quote-unquote hazing can be a really positive thing.
All right, interesting point. Dan Lebowitz, what do you say to that? Is hazing sometimes a good bonding, a way to bond among teammates, a good initiation rite?
Well, I think you have to probably define in her, you know, relative to her comment and what we're talking about, what we think hazing is. And I think that, you know, to me, that more sounds like figuring out a bonding ritual around the cooperative spirit of sport and teamwork as it relates to those athletes in that situation. You know, what we're talking about here is violence against other humans, violence promulgated in sort of a group format, violence promulgated generally by older athletes on younger athletes or stronger athletes on weaker athletes or stronger individuals. Let's take it out of the realm of sports. Stronger individuals on weaker or more disenfranchised individuals. So I think, you know, I think it's a misnomer to maybe call a bonding exercise, which might be considered in many respects a fraternity type exercise that isn't really crossing the boundaries of what we would consider violent hazing or sexually charged hazing as hazing. It's probably more something in the realm of cooperative spirit and teamwork.
You know, you say rape culture and you talk about the United States, but certainly many of us would think that the culture may be more of a rape culture in other countries and it would have gotten better in the United States. Is that a false assumption?
I think it is a false assumption. I think that the numbers of you know, when they do studies about women that are going to be sexually assaulted in their lifetime or they do percentages, the numbers used to be around 1 out of every 6, and those numbers are now around 1 out of every 5. And if you think about that percentage of change and you think about there's an awful lot of outgrowths of that. You know, when we talk about rape culture, it's often dismissed, I think, because generally it's associated with women. So the Somerville incident gets raised up, and it should be raised up for all the reasons of a sexually charged, violent hazing incident. But I think it also should bring a spotlight onto the whole question of rape as not gender specific and as extremely important, but also raise the specter of why we haven't paid more attention to it with respect to women and what they go through on a daily basis.
All right. I'd like to hear from listeners. If you'd like to weigh in on this issue of hazing, what can be done about it? Has it gotten worse? Call us at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Jacob is calling from Cambridge. Jacob, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, what a great opportunity, Deborah. You know, I'm going to say that when I was in school, my parents always told me that if I was ever bullied, it would be okay to go for help, and that, you know, when they were bullied, they never asked for help, and they realized what a mistake that was. But, you know, then I was bullied, and it was so hard to ask for help, and I didn't end up doing it. And even saying that I was bullied has this sort of, you know, stigma attached to it, that you don't want to appear as someone who's vulnerable and that people could take advantage of. So honestly, you know, I don't have a solution, but I think that really there's something about asking for help and that, you know, that I felt afraid of doing.
And how long ago was this, Jacob?
I would say this was about this was about 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So you raise a point that I would like to bring up with Dan. Dan, you know, we've got an anti-bullying law on the books. We've appropriated funds to try to address bullying in schools because of some terrible things that have happened in high schools in Massachusetts. Can laws address this problem?
I think that, you know, it's commendable to have a law and it's commendable to have plans, and every school is required to have a plan. But in terms of the extent of funding that's put towards this, again, this goes back to the comment I made earlier about, you know, this is a social fabric ill and this is a social science ill. And to Jacob's point, you know, we haven't given kids that are either the aggressors, the victims, or more importantly, the bystanders around the toolkit and the skill set to be empowered to make proactive choices, to step in, to be sort of the mediator for the Jacob so that he isn't feeling like an outcast, that instead we've created a dynamic where it's socially unacceptable for the bully or for the hazer to do the action that he's doing. And I think that starts with education for coaches, administrators, faculty, and students. I don't think we can put the entire onus on students, but I think you create a number of people in a room and you have a ongoing facilitated conversation. Conversation with scenarios that lasts well longer than, you know, a one-off of a 1.5 hours or 2 days. It's something that's sustainable and throughout your school year, just like you would social studies or anything else.
I think we'll talk about some recommendations from some of the workshops that you lead in schools about this very topic, but I want to be able to get some of our callers on the air. Mark is calling from Cambridge. Mark, can you hear us?
Yes, I need to just give me one. Okay, great. You're now off the speakerphone. I can talk to you. I grew up in the 50s and 60s. I was basically the smallest boy in the class, and I was constantly terrified of bullying. Over the years since then, I've looked into it, and there is absolutely no question, that it's true that girls do sometimes get bullied and some girls do get raped, the overwhelming majority of the victims of physical violence, physical hazing, are boys. And I personally have a big problem with taking a phenomenon where the majority of victims are boys and inventing a label like rape culture that takes the focus away from the majority of victims and focuses it, it puts an image in people's minds that, you know, where when they think about this, what they're thinking of is girls as victims, and they completely forget that the majority of the kids who are being harmed by this are boys.
Hmm. All right, well, let's ask Dan Lebowitz that very topic. Are the majority of folks involved in victims in these cases boys?
I think, you know, there's been an awful lot of hazing incidents across both, especially now, you know, there's been a much greater balance between men and women hazing incidents. And I mean that balance in a negative way as opposed to a positive way. I would say in response to that, you know, I talked earlier about the way in which we acculturate young boys in the country. And so I do want to, you know, but they're two phenomena and they overlap. And I think it's irresponsible to not say that they overlap. You know, rape culture is a phenomenon about power dynamic, and that power dynamic rolls into a lot of the hazing culture, a lot of the bullying culture. And I think it does go back to that whole concept of the acculturation of young boys in a construct of manhood, where the construct only allows for, I'm the toughest person on the block, I'm tougher than you are, and I'm going to prove that I'm tougher than you are. We don't allow in that definition kindness, compassion, respect for women, respect for other boys, any of those issues, because we somehow have taken that out of the definition of what the construct of manhood is.
If you could, and we have just about a minute or so left, if you could give just a couple of top pointers, maybe one or two, to people listening, young people listening who may be bullied right now or who may be concerned about hazing, maybe they're joining a fraternity at the start of this school year, or parents, what should they tell their kids? What would you say?
I think that, you know, for parents and for other people involved in the lives of these kids, I think kids should talk to their parents. It doesn't make them weak or anything else. And I think those parents should instruct them about the need to talk to their teachers ahead of time or the professors ahead of time about what options for education are out there. How can we get bystander education on our campus? How can we get this in fraternities? This is a problem. This is what we face. This is what I'm facing. And can you help me with solutions?
All right. Dan Lebowitz is Executive Director of Northeastern University's Center for Sport in Society. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, we continue our series on the Boston mayoral election with a look at the continuing problem of drug abuse and addiction in Andrew Square in South Boston. I'm Deborah Becker with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.